Fed up of flawed robes, driven to distraction and drowning with doom boxes? Tired of living in chaos? Welcome to Decluttering Untangled, how to declutter when you're overwhelmed, ADHD or autistic. I'm going to help you uncover the secrets to decluttering, no matter what hurdles you face. You'll discover how to declutter, de-stress and transform your world. I'm Heather Tingle, reformed hoarder, neurodivergent declutter queen and your guide through the maze of mess. Let's get untangled. Hello, Untanglers. Welcome to another episode of Decluttering Untangled. In today's episode, I want to talk about working with hoarders. Now, let me start off by saying I absolutely hate the term hoarders. It is a subject very close to my heart, and I feel that hoarders get a bad rap, and the term hoarders I absolutely hate. They are people, they are clients, they are collectors, they are human beings, and I think the term hoarders has been given a bad rap from the press, from TV shows that have viewed it as entertainment. And I think we forget that there are people behind the stuff. I think there's also a fallacy out there that all hoards are dirty. Actually, I've worked with dirty homes, I've worked with clean homes that are hoarded. And at the end of the day, the client should always be treated with respect, regardless of their home. It is not a lifestyle choice. They are not choosing to live like this, regardless of what you think, regardless of what anybody thinks. I have every single client I've ever worked with that has got hoarding disorder has admitted at some point in the process, if they could wave a magic wand and not have hoarding disorder, they absolutely would. And I totally and utterly believe that. It is a recognised mental health condition. I think it's very closely linked with OCD. And I know the TV programmes won't show that. However, I find that clients with hoarding disorder work extremely hard. It is extremely tiring living in a full home, and they work extremely hard to try and keep on top of their stuff. And it's very, very difficult. So, of course, you're not going to be able to dust rooms if you can't get in them, of course. And then if it gets to the state where they're too embarrassed to let people into their homes, things get broken, so windows will get broken, boilers get broken, the stuff can go into bathrooms so that they can't use the shower or the toilet anymore. Of course, that's going to create some mess and some dirt. Of course it is. Don't think that they enjoy living like that, because they really don't. I think a very good documentary on this subject, where you can see the real pains from family and people working with someone with hoarding disorder, is the Jasmine Harmon documentary. It's quite old now, and I've not seen really another documentary since that is as equally as touching and as sensitive to the subject. If you want to have a look on YouTube, and I will put the link in the show notes too, it's called My Hoarder Mum and Me, and it's a very sympathetic viewpoint from Jasmine and also her mum's point of view as well. So it's really worth looking at that. I'm hoping that if you work with someone with hoarding disorder, or you love someone with hoarding disorder, you are going to be able to get a little bit of something from this today. And if not, you may get some tips and tricks to deal with your own stuff in the meantime too. So one of the things in that documentary is she mentions that she tried to make her mum choose between her and the hoard, and her mum couldn't do it because it isn't a choice. And often when I'm working with services will try and get the client to choose between the hoard and their tenancy and living in their home. And actually, this is really unfair, even though it is done with the best of intentions. So I've worked with clients that have had forced clearance in the past. Forced clearance, I know services tend to think that this is, you know, to keep the client safe, to keep someone in their home. And also friends and family with the best of intentions will do a clear maybe when the person is in hospital and feel that they're doing a good thing. actually, it is the worst thing from my point of view that you can do. It is absolutely traumatic as hell. If you imagine all your worldly goods, your really important possessions, you go out the house and then you come back and someone has taken them. Imagine if you've ever been burgled. It is a very similar feeling to that, that never goes away. It is so traumatic that it will set you back years. What it does tend to do, from my experience, it tends to make the person manipulative, lying. They will hide new items they've got in because they don't want to show you that it's got worse. They will feel shame about it because if they have had a forced clear, they've not learnt to turn their brain, rewire their brain to make different decisions. So they can't just suddenly, because they've got a beautiful new home, stop thinking the way they think. Like, that's not possible. So they will start maybe manipulating people, other people taking stuff, or they will lie to you, or they will hide their stuff. And a lot of the time, hoarding gets into more of a stressful situation because clients don't know what they have anymore because they've had to put things wherever they could find room for them, or they've had to hide things in cupboards or in bedrooms that they don't use. And because they've had to hide it, they put things in bags more than likely, they don't know what they have. So it's really important that clients aren't forced to justify why they want to keep something. They shouldn't be forced to justify why they've bought something. The fact that they want to keep it is absolutely enough. And yes, it's very useful for them. And I work with clients in this way. It's very useful for someone to explain why, so that I understand why it's important, but they never have to justify it. The fact that they want to keep it is absolutely fine. Yes, explain the story behind it. That can be very cathartic and very, very useful. And a lot of the time, clients will remember every last reason why they've got it, where it came from, what they were doing when they bought it, how it made them feel, what was going on in life when it happened. And sometimes, just by talking it through, sometimes they can come to their own conclusion that actually, how I felt then isn't how I felt now, or actually I've got other items from that time, or actually those reasons are a bit silly, aren't they? And I would never say any reason was silly because I've kept lots of ridiculous things in my time. The fact that you want to keep them is totally enough. If you have a forced clear, often the client will rebuy items, and that can breed an awful lot of resentment because they've had to spend extra money to bring items back in, or it'll just get worse. So if you can just take one thing from this, removing items from a home without client consent, or if a client feels bullied into it, that is not consent either, do not do it. There are better ways. It takes a lot longer. They're living in probably precarious situations in the meantime, but actually it is a kind of way of doing it, and it is a more long-term solution. It is not a quick fix. Often clients will tell me that they never had anything growing up, and it sends them back to whatever it is that they are trying to cover up, whichever feelings that they are repressing or trying to heal from. It sends them straight back to that awful feeling in the pit of their stomachs when someone comes and touches their stuff or moves it or removes it. It is their safe space. So if you imagine if someone came to your home and said that your items were rubbish, how would that make you feel? I mean, I'd feel pretty annoyed, to be fair with you. I mean, I'm not going to swear on you, but I'd feel very resentful. I'd feel like you were the last person I wanted in my home. I would feel, I'd feel quite violated. So do not judge the items in any way, but do get them talking about it, because that is very helpful. I obviously work with neurodivergent clients, and I have to say I have not worked with one client yet so far that I'm aware of with hoarding disorder that hasn't been neurodivergent, specifically autistic or ADHD. And these are clients that are, you know, sometimes elderly, sometimes in their 30s, and all of them are totally unaware of the way their brain works is different to other people's, yet everyone else is telling them that what they're doing is wrong and they don't know why. If they are forced to let things go, there will be regret. The one thing you do not want is regret. You want to feel maybe slightly uncomfortable letting things go because it's a new way of living. It's a new way of making your brain work. But it should never feel that you're being forced. You should never feel regret in letting something go. And also, clients are so used to putting things down anywhere, it takes a long time for that habit to break. So things may be keeping going backwards for a long period of time, and you need to not take it personally. So when I'm working with a client and we're zoning things and we're putting things in set places, it is very, very normal for me to go back. Usually I work on a weekly basis. It's very normal for me to go back a week later and items that we'd put in a certain position have moved around the home somewhere else because they've been so used to using something and putting it down wherever there was space for it. That takes a long time for your brain to remember where something was meant to go. It does get better the more you do it though. The main thing from my point of view is that you need a holistic review and a lot of external support. Many, many agencies need to be involved. And if you are struggling with hoarding yourself, then please do not be scared of this external support. People genuinely are there to help you. So the fire service is a very, very good agency to speak to so that they can help you minimize risk, because that is what it is all about. Why external services get involved is minimizing that risk to your safety and others. But look at other external support, like going out with friends. What makes you feel good other than acquiring something? So having things outside of your home that makes you feel good, so being social, not shopping, please note, I don't know, going to the cinema, seeing friends, going for a walk, going to a coffee shop, you know, what makes you feel good? Because if other things are going good in the outside world, when you come back to your home, they will feel better to equip to deal with their stuff. Having someone to sell the items that you are able to let go of is very, very useful, because seeing items given away for a bargain price is really, really hard. The worst thing you can possibly do is take someone with hoarding disorder to a car boot sale. And I did slightly do a little bit of a smug smirk when in Jasmine's documentary that they tried to sell things at a car boot sale and her mum got quite distressed. Obviously I wasn't smirking about this dress, but as soon as I heard the word car boot sale, I thought, oh no, this is the worst thing you can possibly do. Because first of all, it's a place to buy stuff. Let's face it, everybody loves a car boot. Everybody loves a rummaging for a bargain. Taking someone with hoarding disorder to a car boot sale is a match made in hell, quite frankly. So the worst thing you can do is that. But also, if you've got people haggling over your prized possessions, that feels so awful. So it's the worst thing you can do. So trying to get someone else to sell items that are worth money on your behalf, if you suffer with hoarding disorder, is a better way of doing it. Get a friend to list things for you. So you give them to your friend, they list and sell them, and then hopefully that will make you feel a little bit better about it. When you first work with someone with hoarding disorder, you would start by not actually letting anything go. We're not going to declutter. We're going to, first of all, find out about the person. And then what you're going to do is you're going to look at knowing what they've got and where it is. So it may mean putting items together, creating zones, and that is very difficult with very full homes. However, it really, really does help. And it also allows them to trust you, which is the most important thing, so that they, if they find some easy wins of things that they can let go of, you can give massive amounts of encouragement. That feels really good. They're moving forward, but also it's making it easy for them to access what they've got, because when they know what they've got and they know where it is, they're less likely to rebuy that type of item because they don't have to, because they can get to it and they know where it is. Things like putting sticky labels on drawers. I use post-it notes all the time with my clients, sticky labels and Sharpie markers all the time. So that if you can label what things are, where they are, brilliant, you're on to a winner. If you can contain items into clear boxes and make it well labeled, so if things are at risk of avalanche, for example, so you know you've barely got a walkway, can you stack clear boxes instead to remove the threat of avalanche, but also so that you can start to zone things and then boxes are a specific type of item. So instead of going through an entire house or tripping over things, they just need to go into a box. That might mean moving other boxes out of the way, and it might mean that you haven't got a lot of space, but it can be very, very helpful. And focus on and do not touch until you are way, way down into the process what they think of as precious. Now, absolutely everything is going to start off by being precious, but what are their core values? What are the core important things, usually things they started off by collecting in the first place? What are the most important items to them? What is important to them? Is it people? Is it pets? You know, is it their hobbies? What are those hobbies? What did they enjoy doing? Let's reminisce as we talk. Let's reminisce and go through things as we put things into boxes so that you get a sense of what is important to them. So that later on, as you go through the process of decluttering, you can compare this is really important versus this that isn't that important. And we've only got space for one. So I think you're really into this type of thing. So what do you think? And, you know, you give those suggestions, but you never make the decision. One thing that works really well is no buy lists. So a lot of time people will say you're buying too much, you're bringing too much in. And they will say you cannot, please don't buy anything when you next go out. That is really difficult. If you've got that urge to buy stuff, it's really almost impossible to not buy. So try a no buy list of things. This is things we've got loads of. We don't need any of these things. But then they can create a buy list of things actually that might come in useful. So if, for example, you know, you've got a broken light and it needs a new light bulb, you could put the light bulb on a buy list so that next time when they go out and they've got that urge to buy something, they can buy something that's, I wouldn't say productive because they've probably got about 50 million light bulbs somewhere else, but you could, they've got a purpose for that visit for shopping. One of the things that clients always do is one day thinking. So one day I'm going to read these. One day I'm going to give this to this person. One day I'm going to put these in alphabetical order, for example. That one day is the day that you're there. Okay, so let's do it now then. It may be that doing it now is too scary. Oh, I'm not ready for that yet. Okay, so we'll put that to maybe a couple of weeks' time, see how we get on, and we can do that. Sometimes it can be done as homework and a client can do it. Although if they are neurodivergent, homework is probably not a good idea because they'll just feel bad when they haven't done it. What are you going to do with these items? So is it likely to actually happen? So are you really going to wear these 6-inch heels when at the minute your feet really hurt and you don't go out anywhere and you've got, you know, you've had an operation on your foot? Is that likely? You know, could these items be given to someone else that you really like? Or do you have a charity that you really adore? Is that possible? And if you've got an item that you had, I just saw it and thought it'd be great for something, go back to the It Might Come In Handy episode. Do you have a concrete plan for that item to repurpose? If not, maybe that might be something that can go. Some rules for you if you work with someone with hoarding disorder. You do not touch anything without permission. And I mean anything. That sweet that's dropped on the floor, that wrapper, that piece of thing that you call rubbish, that coat that's on the floor, you do not touch it. Trust takes time. And the more you touch their things, the more stressful they're going to be, the more anxious they're going to be. At the beginning, they're going to think that you're maybe going to accidentally put it in the bin, or maybe you're going to pretend not to and you're going to hide it, you're going to take it away from them. So you don't touch anything. You just go and talk and listen. Do not trick them. Do not pretend things are broken if they're not, and do not try and hide items to throw away. I knew when I lived in my home when it was very, very full, I knew what I had. I knew where everything was. Couldn't always find it, but I knew roughly where it was. If items disappeared, I would not allow you back in my house ever again. So do treat people holistically. They are people. What are they missing that they're replacing with the stuff? What is it keeping them safe? How can you support them to feel less anxious and more safe so they're less reliant on the stuff? Highly likely they have suffered awful trauma in their lives. They have suffered bereavements. They have suffered all sorts of things. You have no idea what they have been through. It is going to take time before they can open up. They may never open up. It takes time for them to process, and it's highly likely that they've never processed it and they've just been working with stuff to hide whatever it is that they're trying to stop thinking about. So please remember, they are a person and they go at their pace, and you celebrate their achievements. Or if things go backwards, you do not take it personally. Or occasionally you might ignore if things have gotten backwards, or you might take time to explore. Like, why was it difficult last week? What triggered you into going out? What made you go out and buy more things? Or what made you get stressed about this particular thing? Like, what happened? So be kind. Do not touch their stuff. Do not do force clears, and listen to the client working in a holistic manner. There you go. I hope that's given you something to think about. So do remember to be kind to yourself and keep untangling. Thanks for joining me for today's episode of Decluttering Untangled. If you found anything that I've said today helpful, please do me a favour, hit that subscribe button or leave me a review. It's like receiving a virtual high five that keeps me going and lets me know that I'm helping real people out there and I'm making a difference. Please remember, you're not alone in this. I'm building a community of fellow untanglers over on Facebook. Just visit the show notes for the link to my free decluttering community. So until next time, remember, you're not alone, you're not lazy, you can untangle your life.